Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, hold on.
So we'll go ahead and call this regularly scheduled but irregularly conducted Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Stephanie, can you go ahead and have a roll call for attendance?
Smith.
Yes, here.
McBride.
Yeah.
Mins.
Yeah.
Moss.
Yeah.
Sherwood.
Here.
McAndrews. Moore.
Okay. Thank you. And who do we have from staff present?
Yes, Jerry Moore, Planning Development Director, Stephanie, Admin Assistant, and Amelia Schoenemann, Planner.
All right, thank you.
Okay, this is Department of Operations and County Services.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Sandra King, Director of External Operations and County Services, Stewart County.
Great. Thank you. All right. So thank you for that. Are there any proposed changes to the agenda?
Hey, Marvin, this is Doug. Did anybody get that I'm here?
I got you now.
We're getting some static on this end. If you could mute your phones if you're not talking, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
And Marvin, could you also ask if there's anyone else present on the line from the public?
Yes, I can. Is there anybody else present from the public?
Yes, Linda Merkin.
Yeah, I hear her being answered.
What was that?
Richard Johnson?
Yes.
Thank you. Gina McAndrews?
Chuck Jackson.
Kurt Friedrich.
John Davey with Fox Engineering?
Who was the gentleman that communicated to us before Kurt Friedrich?
Rich Johansson.
After Rich.
David Stein.
David Stein. Thank you. Okay, thank you, Marvin.
All right, thank you. If everyone could mute your phones, anyone from the public, I guarantee that we will provide a prompt for when it's time for you to provide input and allow time. So if everyone can just please mute unless there's something that you need to provide.
I have no clue how to mute my phone.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fine right now. There's no static.
Okay. Are there any proposed changes to the agenda? Okay, hearing none, the agenda will stand as presented, as provided online. Are there any proposed changes to the minutes from the meeting on the 1st of April?
No.
If not, okay, thank you. If there's not any input, can we have a motion to approve those minutes?
I said we approve the minutes. I'll second it.
I'm Cheryl. I moved. Cheryl Moss and moved that.
And who was the second?
Hey, Cheryl, we have a...
Oh,
We have a motion by Moss.
The second by McBride.
And the second by McBride, thank you. Can we vote, have a roll call vote on the approval of the minutes? Stephanie?
Moss.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Mins.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
McAndrews.
Yes.
Moore.
Yes.
And Marvin, one more thing before we move on. Could you also please read the statement, the special note to the public about why we're having this by conference call?
Yes, ma'am. A special note to the public, due to the recommendations to limit gatherings to no more than 10 people in order to help slow the spread of the COVID-19 virus, public access to the meeting will be provided via conference call. To listen and participate in the meeting, members of the public who would like to call in, dial 918-221-0224, enter 222-5929465, followed by the hash key when prompted for the access code. We ask that you mute your phone if possible. Audio recordings of all board meetings will be posted on our website, www.storycountyiowa.gov, shortly after the meeting is concluded. You may access these recordings at any time by clicking on the Meetings and Agendas button on the homepage. Thank you, Stephanie. Okay, now is the time for public comment for anything that is not included on the agenda. So if there's something that you would like to bring up that is not going to be covered on the agenda today, then please speak up, state your name and your address for the record. Okay, hearing none, we will move on to the public hearing. At this time, we have a discussion and consideration of rezoning 01-20 and subdivision 06-20 for Prairie Valley Major Subdivision Preliminary Plat, rezoning and C2C Comprehensive Plan Future Land Use Map Amendment, presentation by Amelia. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm going to give an overview of the proposed Prairie Valley subdivision and how it meets the standards of approval for a preliminary plat, rezoning, and C plan amendment. Staff is
recommending
approval. Yes.
I'm just going to interrupt real quick. When you're going through your presentation, if you are presenting any of the attached documents, if you could just state which document you're referencing, that way we can all look at it as well. Thank you.
Yes. I will be referencing several items. These are all available on the Agenda Center for download. You can go to the Story County Planning and Development page. I sent a link out to commission members earlier, but for any members of the public, there is a Planning and Zoning Commission subpage and the agenda of May 6th. From the agenda, all items that I will reference to are linked and available for download there. The request before you is a major subdivision preliminary plat for Prairie Valley, as well as a rezoning C2C plan amendment request. We don't receive major subdivision plats very frequently, so I wanted to go through the process for those and where we are in it currently. The rezoning of the property has already occurred. The northwest, the northeast, and southeast quarters of the subject property were rezoned to the R1 residential district in 2018. As part of that 2018 request, there was also a C2C future land use map amendment to the rural residential area. Maps of the current zoning and C2C future land use map designations are in the staff report on the Agenda Center, if you'd like to take a look at those. The subdivision review process is different than the rezoning process in that there are clear requirements in the code for what is to appear on the plat and what should be submitted. If these requirements are met, as they are in this case, the plat is recommended for approval. Again, staff has found all these requirements to be met. The request before you tonight is just the preliminary plat. The final plat for each phase will also be submitted at a later date. The final plat has to be submitted within 1 year of the preliminary plat. For submittal of the final plat, all improvements, including roads, grading, stormwater management, and utilities are required to be completed for a development agreement, and financial security submit within a certain time frame, within the time frame of 1 year, a maximum of 2 years is required to warrant these improvements as well. And then with the submittal and approval of a final plat, the actual subdivision is recorded and the lot divided. The subject property is the northwest section to the entire Section 7 of Franklin Township. The entire northwest quarter of Section 7 of Franklin Township. And this is located at the southeast quarter of the intersection of 500th Avenue and 170th Street. Again, in 2018, a rezoning was approved of this property, and that included 8 conditions for the subdivision. I'm going to go through those 8 conditions and how they're met. So the first condition is that the total number of development lots is not to exceed 70. There are 70 lots proposed as part of this request. The second condition is that the applicant shall work with Environmental Health and the Planning and Development Department to identify opportunities to group septic systems. The intent of this condition was to protect the remnant prairie from moisture from the discharge of the septic lateral. A protective subdrain has instead been proposed to divert runoff from the septic laterals away from prairie remnants. This proposal has been reviewed by the county sanitarian and county conservation, and they both support this alternative. There has been a request for an additional tile on lot 52. And the applicant did provide an amended plan to show the drain. And staff would recommend that this is added to the preliminary plat as a condition of approval. The third condition is that the applicant was to coordinate with county conservation to identify any environmentally sensitive areas on the subject property. Dr. Thomas Rossler, a professor at Drake University, completed a field review and located several prairie remnants on the site. These are shown on the preliminary plat. They are circled in yellow. And there's also a buffer shown around these of 35 feet. That's a dashed line if you're looking at the preliminary plat. Conditions 4 and 5 of the rezoning were that for these environmentally sensitive areas, the prairie remnants and the floodplain, a rezoning and a C2C plan amendment were to be requested to protect these areas. Not all of these areas were identified as natural areas on the C2C plan, and some of the areas are currently rezoned R1 residential or A1 agricultural. And so to further protect these, there was a condition that they be amended to the natural area designation and then rezoned to the Greenbelt Conservation Area designation. And so that's why you have a rezoning request and a C2C plan amendment before you tonight as well. So those requests are to further protect these identified environmentally sensitive areas on the site. The fifth condition of the rezoning also required that a management agreement with Story County Conservation be developed for these environmentally sensitive areas. However, since the 2018 rezoning, the developer has instead decided to deed this area and the lot designated with a letter shown on the preliminary plat. to set up Story County Conservation for a county park. There are 4 lots total to be dedicated, totaling 81.8 acres. There were several measures originally proposed as part of a management agreement before it was determined that these areas would just be deeded to Story County Conservation. And both prescriptive measures have been addressed through the preliminary plat, proposed covenants, and an ownership management agreement instead. These include silt fencing around the prairie remnants during construction, a permanent split rail fence on common lot lines with the development lots with the county-owned property to provide protection and demarcation. There will also be split rail fencing built between any outlots owned by the homeowners association and the lot owners' lots. The proposed covenants include prohibitions on the use of fertilizers that contain phosphorus. Water quality testing will occur on the Story County Conservation-owned lots. Per the covenants and ownership management agreement, all homeowners association outlots and Story County conservation-owned lots that contain green space are to be managed as native prairie remnants. And there's also provisions on no debris or hazardous material stored on the subdivision. The Story County Conservation Board will be taking action on these provisions at their May 11th, 2020 meeting. The sixth condition on the rezoning was a buffer of no less than 50 feet maintained from the property to the east. That is shown on the preliminary plat. There's also a condition 7 for a 20-foot wide easement for a future hard surface trail on the north and west side of the proposed subdivision. This is shown on the plat. I'd also like to note that an additional trail system will be built inside of the town-owned lots by Story County Conservation as soon as the summer of 2021. This is also shown on the preliminary plat. It's just a concept of what it could look like. It might look different depending on the direction they go. And the eighth and final condition on the rezoning is that the developer is to meet the design standards for a residential conservation design subdivision, which are in our residential conservation design overlay zoning district. And essentially, that is that no land shall be developed that's held to be unsuitable because it has been identified as environmentally sensitive. So in addition to identifying the prairie remnants, applicant has also commissioned an archaeological study to ensure that there were no burial grounds or Native American mounds on the site. And Story County Conservation performed a desktop survey through the Iowa Department of Natural Resources to ensure there were no threatened or endangered species on the site. Other submittal requirements in Chapters 87 and 88 of the Land Development Regulations for major subdivisions have also been determined to be met. I'm just going to go through just three of these. So the applicant has submitted letters from all utility providers for the subdivision. Alliant Energy is going to enter into an extension agreement to provide gas to the site. The Gilbert Fire Chief provided a letter confirming their ability to serve the subdivision. They did recommend that all homeowners subscribe and have a security system to allow early advanced alerting if there was a possible fire. That is recommended as a condition that be encouraged. And they also had a note about how hydrants are used to fight fires. They would actually attach a hose to allow water to flow into a portable tank rather than pumping directly from the hydrants due to pressure issues. Staff followed up and showed them the location of the hydrants and the road plan. And just to clarify the issue on pumping to that tank from the hydrants rather than directly from the hydrants. And then the fire chief just clarified that in pumping has resulted in dirty water for anyone living on that line in the past. Chapter 88 also requires that subdivisions are planned so that there is a street arrangement would allow for access to adjoining properties if they were ever to be platted. On the preliminary plat, there is a stub road shown from Foxtail Court to the adjoining property to the east, and notes about where possible other extensions could occur if the adjacent area were to ever be platted. Erosion control requirements apply. They will be getting a national pollutant discharge elimination system permit through the IODNR. A stormwater management plan was submitted under the county ordinance. We will be doing soil quality restoration on all development lots to provide infiltration to manage a rainfall depth of 1.25 inches, which is, 90% of rain events. And for larger rain events, they will be providing 5 detention basins so that runoff rates do not exceed the current rate from the 5-year storm events. They also completed a traffic study. The study determines that a right lane will likely be warranted on 170th Street at 500th Avenue with the second phase of the development. Per the traffic impact ordinance, the Board of Supervisors is to review all recommended improvements from this study, and then the recommendation as to who should finance improvements would come from the county engineer. The county may require improvements to be provided from the applicant, and that is what the county engineer is recommending, that the improvement is paid for and provided by the applicant, as road funds are limited. And this would be before phase two. Just on the rezoning and subdivision plan request, a few notes. Again, during the 2018 rezoning, due to the environmentally sensitive areas not necessarily being designated as such on our natural resources layer as part of the C2C plan amendment, it was required that an amendment be submitted to appropriately designate these areas as natural resources areas. And then a principle of the C2C plan is that we should consider all areas identified as natural resources areas for inclusion in the Greenbelt Conservation Zoning District, which is what the rezoning request is for. These environmentally sensitive areas that are to be that we designated in the future land use plan and rezones will be deeded to county conservation for a new county park. And just one rezoning standard of approval that I'd like to go through. Only the southwest quarter of the subject property is so zoned A1 agricultural. When a property is zoned A1 agricultural, it must have a land evaluation and site assessment score under 267 in order to be rezoned to another designation. This LISA score of the southwest quarter is 266, so it meets this requirement. The area to be rezoned Greenbelt Conservation was previously used for cattle grazing, and the majority of the southwest quarter has been enrolled in the Conservation Reserve Program. This is also the lowest area of the property and contains the FEMA-designated floodplain. So moving on from standards to comments from staff and the public. During a site review on March 11th, 2020, it was noticed there was a debris pile with some construction debris located near Lot 53, and a cleanup within 30 days is recommended as a condition of approval. Staff also asked that a note be added that when the engineering study for the septic locations is completed, if the lateral locations change, that we take another look at that subdrain plan to make sure all lots that need a subdrain to divert moisture from the clearing remnants have one. Staff sent notice letters within a quarter mile on April 28th, 2020, regarding this commission meeting today and the Board of Supervisors meeting on May 19th. We did also place a development proposed sign on the property and published this rezoning in the newspaper. Planning staff received one general inquiry phone call at the time of writing this report. Planning staff has also been in communication with an adjacent landowner, John Johnson, who inquired about the calculation of LISA scores used in the 2018 rezoning. And they also inquired to a commission member about these scores as well. Staff just wants to note that the LISA scores of the parcels in the 2018 rezoning are not a standard to consider as part of the current request. Mr. Johnson did provide a comment today for the commission's consideration, and I forwarded that to you commission members for your review prior to this meeting. I will summarize the comment, but essentially it was a question of, with the 2018 rezoning, staff initial recommendation was for a maximum density allowing 56 lots. The proposal before you tonight is 70 lots, and again, the Board of Supervisors ultimately amended staff's recommended condition to allow 70 lots. So that's why you have a proposal that's proposed to be 70 lots, because that's what's allowed under the approved rezoning ordinance. The city of Gilbert is the only city within 2 miles. This item was on the council's agenda for consideration on May 4th. The item was tabled to the May 18th meeting, as the city wanted to wait until the supervisors took action on a separate tax increment financing request. The first step in that request was to amend the county's policy. However, the motion on amending the county's policy failed for a lack of a second. The May 18th Gilbert City Council meeting will be the day before the Board of Supervisors' first consideration of this subdivision request. Staff does recommend approval of the subdivision plat with conditions and approval of the rezoning and CTC plan amendments. The alternatives for the commission to consider are on page 32 and page 33 of the staff report. The conditions include recommending the alternatives that you may consider tonight are approval of conditions, denial, or remanding the request for additional information. Staff did, on page 32 and 33, break out the subdivision request and the rezoning and CTC plan amendment request as separate motions. So you can act on them together or separately. In your staff report, you will find the alternatives are separated. I'll just go through the recommended conditions on the rezoning, and then I can take any questions. So again, we are recommending approval of the C2C plan amendment and rezoning, and then approval with conditions of the subdivision request. But the conditions are that the County Conservation Board approve the covenant, easement, and management ownership agreement prior to the Board of Supervisors' consideration of the preliminary plat and approval of that plat. Two, that the construction and demolition debris located in the vicinity of Lot 53 shall be removed by June 6, 2020. Condition three, that the protective subdrain for the prairie remnants west of Lot 52 should be added to the preliminary plat prior to recording. Condition four, I note that the protective subdrain plan may change per site evaluation conducted by a certified engineer or soil professionals for septic systems. And the location of lateral fields shall be added. And the final protective subdrain plan shall be reviewed as part of the final plat. On condition five, staff is recommending changing this condition. Again, the developer had a separate tax increment financing request with the Board of Supervisors. The first step, it was actually a request to amend the county's policy. That was on the board's agenda yesterday, and the motion failed for lack of a second. Again, this is a separate request and is not before the commission for consideration, and you're not taking any action on it. And again, the motion failed for lack of a second. And so given that condition five should be amended, that the Board of Supervisors, at the recommendation of the county engineer, shall determine a method to pay for the right turn lane on 170th at 500 as part of the preliminary plat consideration. Again, the county engineer has recommended the applicant pay for that turnway, as it is a result of this development. The applicant, I believe, is going to be asking the commission to not recommend that they pay for the turn lane. The applicant noted that they believe the right turn lane would be warranted by 2029 with asset development based on existing traffic growth. The evening peak at the intersection is currently 49 cars, making right turns onto 500 based on the traffic study. A turn lane is warranted at a peak of 57 cars. The development will add 8 cars to this peak, warranting the turn lane by a second phase. And so given its contribution to the existing traffic, that's why they're asking that they should not have to pay for the turn lane. And I think they will speak to that request as well. The sixth condition is that the applicant shall consider how to encourage a homeowners association should consider encouraging homeowners to subscribe to a security system to provide early alert if there was a fire. That's following fire chief's recommendation. The seventh condition is that a need for a right turn lane at 500th Avenue and 170th Street should be monitored after full build-out of the development. This is part of the traffic study findings. And the board of supervisors may take action as part of the final plat. To determine who should pay for this turn lane if it is determined to be needed. And the eighth condition is that the developer of Prairie Valley or Homeowners Association would be responsible for any costs of a roadway connection on Outlot D if there was ever a development proposed to the east. I can take any questions now.
Do any of the members of the commission have any questions for Amelia? Thank you, Amelia, by the way.
No, not really. I just read along with her, so no, I don't have any.
This is Kathy. I have a question for the developer. Since there is life...
Okay, Kathy, I'm having a hard time hearing you, and we'll get to the developers in just a second. Right now, it's just for the staff. Any questions for Amelia about her presentation?
No.
Okay. Hearing none, now is the time for public comment on this proposed CTC plan update and subdivision, major subdivision proposal. So I would like to start with whoever is here representing the developers.
Hello, this is Kurt Friedrich. Can everyone hear me?
Yep. Yeah. Kurt, also provide your address for the record, please.
Thank you. Kurt Friedrich with Friedrich Companies at 106th Street in Ames. My partner on the project, Rich Johansson, is also on the call. He and I comprise Quarry Estates LLC, which is the owner of the property and the developer of the proposed Prairie Valley. And also on the call to address some of the technical aspects of the project, and there frankly are many, and the issue of the potential turning lanes, which we think are quite discretional to the county. And really largely the conditions for those turning lanes as per the traffic report already exist and are not being contributed to by our project. Therefore, it should be in the discretion of the county at some future date to review that possible construction. And John Gady is that individual with Fox. But Amelia, wow, you did a fantastic job of presenting the report. It's a culmination of a tremendous amount of work. We're in 18 months into this process since the Board of Supervisors had approved the land use plan amendments, the rezoning, and the ability to create up to 70 home sites on this parcel back in November of 2018. And so we've been very dutiful and deliberate in working with Amelia, Jerry, Margaret, Mike Cox and his team at Conservation have been terrific. And we've had countless meetings, both in person and on property, to arrive at where we are today. I know we're in unprecedented times right now with COVID. To borrow that term, what we are proposing here in terms of a development structure, and I'm viewing this as it's a real marriage between natural elements and neighborhood, is totally unprecedented in the 90-year history of our company. And we've been developing subdivisions, residential subdivisions, over that period of time. And this has just some really unique and special elements that I think are pretty exciting for Story County and for people who would choose to live here, and just folks that would like to come and enjoy Iowa nature at its best. So what we're proposing here is, again, unprecedented in the sense that approximately 50% of our land, the highest percentage that we've ever had before was 25%, and that was with Quarry Estate subdivision in Ames that is on the north boundary of Ada Hayden Park, which was Ames's first conservation subdivision under Ames's new conservation subdivision ordinance. So we're quite experienced in the way of conservation subdivisions. This takes it to a different level. We're actually taking 50% of the land, a little more than that, and putting that into permanent conservation green space for folks to enjoy prairie landscape in perpetuity. Unprecedented in the sense that this would be dedicated to the county and would become a county park. And unprecedented in the sense of adherence to new stormwater regulations and requirements, and really want to champion John Gady and his team at Fox and the good work that they've done with county staff to identify solutions for building structures. The subdrain that Amelia had talked about to collect water and keep hydration away from these prairie remnants is something that's pretty important part of this project. But of course, all these things contribute to cost as well. But at the end of the day, I think we have a really unique and special subdivision to bring to Story County, and I'm pleased with the recommendation that staff has made. We have followed all of the all of the requirements and conditions that were laid out, and we have met all of those conditions and requirements. Yes, it is true regarding the TIF request. I guess we're hopeful that the Board of Supervisors would choose to amend its economic development policy and process statement to expand it to allow rebates to private entities. But unfortunately, that did not happen. And that's fine. I just think that the county wants to and should want to look to support financially in some ways unique and special projects within the county that bring extra benefit to the people, extra enjoyment of the county, and specifically increases the taxable valuations. These are two big goals of the economic development policy statement. And so if it's not through TIF for private entities, perhaps there are other tools in the toolbox that the supervisors can come up with. So would just encourage, I know Linda's on the call, would encourage Linda and Lisa and Laura to continue to evaluate that and try to come up with ways to stimulate economic activity here in the county. Yes, with that, again, I want to thank staff for the recommendation. We are in agreement with that. We're looking forward to getting started here, hopefully this summer, with construction of the project and deliver our first addition of lots. This will be a phased project sometime later in the fall. And that first addition would comprise the Prairie Point Port Road, and that's approximately 28 lots. And it's really important, I think, that we bring on lots like this. There are no other lots in Story County right now that are coming forward in this area. We are practically built out at Cameron Estates. We only have 5 lots remaining out of 50, and some of those are under contract. So we're essentially out of supply with lots, good buildable lots as an alternative to city living. So thank you for your support. Planning and Zoning Commission, I urge your support of our project as well. And I might just turn it over here to John Gady to address our objection to the turning lane condition that was added. John, can you please take that on?
Yeah, thanks, sir. Before I do that, I just want to say this has been such an exciting project to work on. We've come a long way in this 18 months. I think we've revised and fine-tuned this plan over 10 times and trying to address all the parties' concerns to make this a workable project for all. As part of this, regarding the traffic, we hired a professional traffic engineer to do a traffic impact study. And one of the things that came out of that, they said, hey, on 170th, a right turn lane is warranted heading northbound on 50th based on their traffic study that they did at that time. And the traffic was split a little bit odd. It's odd that we would see such a large portion of the traffic heading westbound, the one naked right-hand turn. But that was the result of the study at that particular time. And what's interesting is, if no development occurs, in 2029, about 9 years from now, a right turn lane will be warranted for the county to install a right turn lane. That doesn't mean they need to do it. The level of service out there is great. It's a level of service A. A is the highest. We see intersection operated level of service D and E. So just because it's warranted doesn't mean it's necessary. And we also are concerned, just from the statements, that when we add development to the corridor, the model turns out in 2027, 7 years from now, a right turn lane will be warranted. So it's really close, and our development only adds 8 vehicles or a total of less than 13% of the traffic to that right turn lane. So to burden the entire development to add, you know, a right turn lane for adjacent infrastructure seems burdensome. And so we'd like that reevaluated and see if that can be eliminated as a requirement.
So this is Marvin. I'm going to go ahead and kind of interrupt here for a minute. I see that there are two conditions placed in the recommendation by staff that deal with these turn lanes, right? Two different turn lanes. And the way that those are worded is that those are that the Board of Supervisors and the applicant shall determine payment methods related to these and determine who should pay for these if they are needed. So relative to our recommendation, since we are not an approving body related to this, we don't manage the budget, where these costs would come from. I don't know that we need to address that as much at this level, because all we're doing is, all those recommendations say is that we recommend that the Board of Supervisors and the applicant together decide how that is treated. Okay? So that's not something that we... Yes.
Sorry. That was the recommended change, condition 5, so the county engineer recommended that the applicant should bear the cost. And so the amendment to condition 5 says the Board of Supervisors at the county engineer's recommendation shall determine a method or who should pay for the turn lane, and the county engineer's recommendation is the applicant should. So just to clarify, so it's a recommended amendment language on that one. Yeah.
The recommendation, so I'm looking at the recommendations on page 31, and I'm looking at condition 5.
Yes.
The Board of Supervisors and applicant shall determine a method of payment for the right turn lane as part of the preliminary plat consideration, unless it is to be considered as part of the separate TIF request. If it is to be considered part of the plan, the financing must be determined prior to the submittal. Is that?
We struck after preliminary plat consideration would be the recommendation, because the TIF request did not move forward at the Board of Supervisors yesterday. And so then the traffic impact study ordinance says the county engineer is to recommend to the Board of Supervisors who should pay, and then the Board of Supervisors is to determine as part of the preliminary plat consideration.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And again, Marvin, this is Jerry. That's consistent with the county's zoning ordinance requirements under the new transportation impact analysis.
All right, so what I'm going to say is, again, that as a recommending body, that we can recommend that these things, however, the final approval of this is the Board of Supervisors. And I think having an extended discussion about who should pay for this or who should not, others on the commission are free to disagree with me and have this discussion as necessary. But my understanding is that if it's a question of whether the development pays for it or the county pays for it, that is a discussion that should be had at that next approval meeting between the Board of Supervisors and the applicant.
Yes, I think that understanding is correct, unless the commission would like to make some sort of alternative recommendation, you know, about who should pay. But I think the transportation study or the transportation impact ordinance is pretty clear that the county engineer recommends and then the Board of Supervisors takes action. So I think you're right, Martin.
Okay. I just didn't want to spend an exorbitant amount of time discussing who should pay for the turn lane when that's essentially a discussion above our pay grade.
Agreed.
Go ahead and continue, John, please. Sorry for the interruption.
I don't think I have any other items to add on the turn lane. I will say that historically, you know, I think the board values your opinion. And so it would be nice if you guys weighed in on this. It is seem odd again that based on the study, if you've ever driven this road and where people go, you know, 60% of the people heading westbound are traveling north. 60%, this is very odd. You would think everyone would be heading south. And so we think this is just an irregularity, and it's obviously burdensome on us. And we've worked together as a team on so many of these items. And with the lack of the TIF fund available for the rest of the development, potentially, we just were hoping that we would get some type of recommendation from this board that wouldn't put this whole burden onto the development. And of course, I'm here to answer any other technical questions you have on the plat.
Okay. Are there any other members of the public that would, before we move on to commission discussion, that would like to speak to this topic? Okay, hearing no one else from the public interested in speaking, then it is time for commission discussion. So the floor is open to any members of the Planning and Zoning Commission with questions to the developers or questions to staff or any discussions that need to happen relative to before we have a motion for this, for these two items.
This is Kathy. I just have a question and a concern since I farm and have livestock. Since there is livestock across the road of this development, and I know the farmers have to build the fences to keep the livestock in, how in the development are they going to keep the people from going over to the livestock? Because I know children love livestock. And they will probably go over and try to put their arms through the fence and try to touch the livestock. I've seen it many times. So is there a fence or borders or, well, fence, keep children inside the housing development?
I can try to answer that one and then turn it over to you and the applicant if you have more questions, if you want. This is Amelia. There's a 50-foot buffer required from the property to the east. From the property, with the property to the north, on the preliminary plat, there is a fence plan submitted for slip rail fencing on some of the lots that are closest to 170th, the western lot. Some of those have proposed slip rail fencing. The eastern lots that are closest to 170th don't necessarily have the slip rail fencing proposed, but a condition of the rezoning was that there was at least a 50-foot buffer provided from the property to the east.
Kathy, does that answer your question?
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you.
And
is there any other?
Sorry, it's page 11 of the preliminary plat is the fencing plan. The lots closest to 170th are lots 1 through 5, and I think it's 29 through 33. Lots 1 through 5 have fencing on their rear property line. Lots 29 through 33 do not have fencing proposed in between them and the right-of-way of 170th. And then all the lots in the eastern property line. Yeah. Page 11 of the preliminary plat.
Correct. It wasn't all along that borders that I could see.
Right. And the eastern lots don't have a fence proposed, but they have a 50-foot buffer required.
Correct. That doesn't keep kids from going through that. I just worry about kids and livestock. I've seen it too many times.
All right, are there any other points of discussion?
Yeah, Jerry, or not Jerry, sorry. Amelia, this is Doug. Can you illuminate me again on the right turn lane concept? How many cars are currently there, and what's the threshold, and where is that threshold decided?
Sure. So there's two turn lanes that I'll talk about. I'll start with the turn lane on 170th at 500, so that would be a northbound turn lane. Currently, there's a peak of 49 cars. By the second phase, the traffic study shows an additional 8 cars for 57, and there's a warrant for a turn lane of 57.
I mean, cars a day or 57 cars an hour? Because I was there 3 minutes ago. The beauty of being in these meetings by phone, I was right there, talked in, and I didn't see a single car.
Yeah, it's the peak hour. Let me see what they used for the PM peak hour time. For John, do you know off the top of your head? I'm going to flip through this traffic study real quick.
You said everything exactly right. During that peak hour of PM, whenever that may occur, probably around, 4 to 5 or 5 to 6, we count the maximum amount of cars that happened that hour, and the traffic engineer came up with 49 right turners during that peak hour. And they're saying once that number is projected to be at 57, an increase of 8, that's when a right turn lane is warranted.
And it looks like the peak hour is 4:45 to 5:45.
Okay.
Okay, so this is Doug. I just want to make sure I'm absolutely clear on this. So, John, what's the ballpark price on a right turning lane?
This one will probably be about $75,000.
So we're going to drop, we're going to either require the county or the developer to pay $75,000 for about an hour of peak traffic a day. Give or take. Isn't that, that's what I'm hearing here?
Well, this is John.
Yep.
You know, my concern, obviously, is frankly, I think what you're getting at, that, you know, in 9 years from now, if the development doesn't happen and the numbers are high enough, will the county spend that much money just because it's warranted? And I'm assuming that several intersections around the county are require turn lanes or a worse level of service, and the county doesn't have the money to do it, and they're not doing that. To burden this all on us seems very unfair.
John, you're going to love what I'm going to say. I think putting a turning lane in is absolutely insane for anybody to pay for it. That's insanity. I drive out there every day. Whoever made this arbitrary 57-car peak load thing, I want to hear them in a meeting try to defend that. That doesn't make any sense to me. There shouldn't be a turning lane, period. That's my comment. That's my public comment. Nobody should have to pay for it. This is stupid. It's a stupid waste of people's money. I don't care whose money it is. I'm done ranting.
Thanks, Doug. I agree.
Thank you, Doug.
Cheryl, when was the date that that study was done? What month of the year?
Let's see. They did actual traffic counts. The projection in the traffic study of how many each phase of development could create aren't necessarily, they don't have like a time frame on them that I'm aware of. So they're based on, you know, when each phase will happen of the development.
Amelia, this is Jerry. Cheryl was asking for when they actually did the study, the review of the traffic.
Right.
What days were those?
I'm looking it up.
I believe it was in December.
I think so. I don't know if it actually says. So. I'm not seeing a date in here for the count, Cheryl.
Well, it strikes me that it was a fairly high count for that area. But it also might mean that with the development there, that the development might increase it to that amount, and it might not normally be that amount. It might be kind of an anomaly of when it was counted, but it definitely would make a difference in traffic to have a housing development there, would be my point.
This is PJ. I have a question. Can someone clarify for me the meaning of warrant in terms of would warrant something at a certain number? That's not required. It's a possibility. Please clarify that for me.
Yeah, that was a term used in the traffic study. So they used a certain type of program and plugged in different factors to determine at how many cars at the peak hour would you need a turn lane.
I understand that part.
Yeah.
But when you're saying at some point down the road it's going to be warranted anyway, what does that mean? Required? Possibility? What does that mean?
Yeah, it would exceed or meet the number of cars in the future.
Okay.
2029 based on growth patterns projected. Yeah.
And so that would give a requirement to have one installed. Is that kind of what I'm hearing then?
Or it's
just saying that
yeah.
Go ahead.
could be needed. This is basically what that's saying. It would be needed at that point. You know, I think County Road
based on the criteria.
Limited, yeah, based on the criteria. And there's a capital improvement program budgeting process that they'd likely have to go through for Thank that you. Kind of investment. Yeah.
This is John Gady. I did confirm that the traffic counts were done in March of 2020. And the other question was, the traffic engineer uses what's called the Institute of Transportation Engineers trip generation. It's a standard of care document in our industry that helps us guide and give recommendations on when certain improvements are necessary based on the projections of growth in the corridors.
Thank you, John.
Are there any other questions or discussion points among the commission? If there are no other points of discussion or questions, then we are ready to entertain a motion.
This is Doug. I motion that, Amelia, you may have to help me out here because I can't get the document up. But I motion that we accept the preliminary plat as presented by the applicant.
So we have, this is Marvin, and I will, looking at the agenda, or looking at the staff report, there are the four options. One is to recommend the approval of the zoning amendment, the C2C update, and the rezoning. Can I get that? With the So we need.
That's right, Marvin.
Yeah,
I'm confused. I'm just talking.
That's fine. We need two motions because we have two proposals.
For the subdivision, the recommendation was approval as requested by the applicant with conditions. And to Doug, back to right, so, hearing your motion. So I think
clarification. Doug, I want to clarify your motion. I don't want to squash the motion that you're putting forward. But we need two motions, right? One is related to the rezoning and the C2C plan amendments that are required.
Correct.
And then we also need a motion related to the major subdivision preliminary plat request.
I am recommending we accept staff recommendation on the preliminary plat request, and then why don't we do a second motion for the C2C plan adoption?
Okay, so let's start then with the one that you mentioned first, which is the major subdivision preliminary plat request, and the going with the, I want to make sure that this is what you're recommending, but the recommendation by staff is that we recommend the approval of the proposed major subdivision preliminary plat as put forth in case sub 06-20 with conditions.
Correct.
And there's a list of the eight conditions that they put on that approval. Right?
Perfect.
Okay.
And our initial, this is Jerry. Number five is staff is recommending the amended condition, and I think Amelia can go through it one more time if the commission would like to hear that.
Yeah, sure. Let me know if you'd like me to repeat that one.
Yeah, I don't see option number five on the...
condition number five. Condition at the turn lane that the Board of Supervisors, at the recommendation of the county engineer, shall determine the method to pay for the right turn lane on 170th at 500th as part of the preliminary plat.
Okay, the way I read that, it currently says the Board of Supervisors and applicants shall determine a method to pay for the right turn lane on 170th at 500th as part of the preliminary plat consideration, unless it is to be considered as part of the separate TIF request. If it is to be considered as part of the TIF request, the financing must be determined prior to the submittal of the final plat. So are we saying, right now the way it's worded, that that decision will be made by the Board of Supervisors and the applicant? Are we changing that?
It was proposed to change that because the first step in the TIF request did not move forward yesterday.
Okay.
And so it would be at the recommendation of the county engineer, the Board of Supervisors takes action. It would be the recommended change.
And
that follows the transportation impact study ordinance process.
What I'm going to do is I am going to... I'm going to use executive privilege here and say that since that proposed change is not documented in the materials that were actually put available to the public, that and as complicated as this is already, that if that's a change that staff would like to make, then they have an opportunity to make that at the Board of Supervisors meeting to approve this. Is that fair?
I agree.
Okay. So back to Doug's original motion. We have a motion by Moore for the subdivision 06-20. And his recommendation is to follow the recommendation of staff, which is the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of the proposed major subdivision preliminary plat as put forth in case sub 06-20 with conditions, and those conditions are as documented in the staff report that was published at the start of this meeting. Doug, is that the motion that you're wanting to make?
Correct. Affirmative.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Do we have a second?
I second it. I'm Moss.
Okay. So we have a motion by Moore and a second by Moss. Is there any discussion within the commission relative to the motion that's before?
No.
Okay, hearing no questions or discussion, Stephanie, can we have a roll call vote, please?
More.
Yeah,
107.
Yep. Loss.
Yes.
All right. So that motion has passed for the recommendation. recommendation of the major subdivision plat with conditions. We now need to have a motion relative to the rezoning and the C2C plan amendment request.
Oh, joy.
Can you just tell me, Elliot,
yeah.
Well, I make a motion that we, are we going here?
Yeah, go ahead.
I make a motion that we bring forth the number one Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommendation as it's stated on page 32 of the staff write-up.
Yeah. And that was PJ?
Yes.
Okay. So we have a motion by McBride for the rezoning and CSC update REZ 01-20, taking staff recommendation number one, which is just approval of the proposal. Do we have a second?
I second.
Yeah. All right, so we have a motion by McBride and a second by, I will give that typo to the runner, and that will be
we went to the first person.
Is there any discussion about this motion that we need to have?
Yeah, kind of.
Somebody needs to put their phone on mute.
There was enough, so we were fixing the menu board, although it was all wrong or whatever. But that guy was
Okay, so we have do we need to have any discussion?
That was just good.
Is there going to be no?
No.
All right, hold on a second, I'll address this. Hey, whoever's talking in the background, please mute your phone. Thank you. So we have a motion by McBride, we have a second by Moore. Stephanie, can you have a roll call vote, please?
McBride.
Yes.
Moore.
Yes.
Moss.
Yes.
Vins.
Yeah.
Sherwood.
Yeah.
Smith.
Yes.
Vic Andrews.
Yeah.
All right. It looks like both motions passed. These are recommendations that will go before the Board of Supervisors, and I guess these both go to, do these both go to the Board of Supervisors?
They'll be on the May 19th agenda.
Okay. So these are both approved. Anybody that is affiliated or interested in this topic, please attend the Board of Supervisors call on the 19th, where these items are up for additional discussion and actual approval or denial. So thank you everyone for joining that was joined specifically for this topic. We are going to move on to new business, item 7 on the agenda. And it looks like a discussion about Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Jerry, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you, Marvin. Can the commissioners hear me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As Marvin mentioned, this is a discussion for the Zoning Commission. This is an item that's been on the Planning and Zoning Commission staff's for several years since I started. The Board of Supervisors, which I'll get into shortly, did pass a resolution stating their support for continuing our partnership with the City of Ames and the City of Dover in working through land use and growth challenges and opportunities within the urban growth area. We're talking about the land area that's 2 miles outside the city of Ames. So what I'm going to go through is the memo that I prepared. We proposed a copy of the Ames River Fringe Plan document, which was approved in 2006. We also included the 28E agreement. 28E comes from Code of Iowa, Chapter 28E, and it allows and encourages local governments, municipalities, counties to work together to provide common services, and in this case, it's a land use planning agreement. We also attached the land use framework map. We did reach out to other county departments to request some input on the impacts of the Ames River Fringe Plan, planning in general, growth and development with regard to the various county departments. We did receive one response from Environmental Health Department, and Margaret James, the director, did provide some really good comments, so I'd like to go through those at the end. I think for the most part, the presentation that I have will be about 25 minutes, and I'll try to be as efficient as possible, but again, I'm going through the memo. So we're going to provide some background information. We're going to talk about some of the changes that have occurred in this area. We're going to talk about comments from the Board of Supervisors, as well as comments from the Planning and Zoning Commission and staff. This is an area that impacts a lot of us in different ways. One of us may live there, we may have relatives that live within this area. There's residential subdivisions to the north and to the south. There's recreation opportunities. There's mining activity. You've got Iowa State research farms. Agricultural land use is probably the predominant land use. So there's a lot of different things going on. And we have this Ames River Fringe Plan agreement to manage it all. So I just want to start with the expiration of the agreement does expire in July 11, 2021, which is that and the fact that the City of Ames is going through their comprehensive planning process and adopting a new, or working towards adopting a new comprehensive plan, the Ames 2040 plan. And so those are reasons for us to take a look at the current Ames River Fringe Plan policies and work together internally, try to have some consistency between staff, between the commission and the board before we start reaching out with the partners, with Ames and Gilbert, and reaching out to solicit input from the general public on possible amendments as we go forward. So the Board of Supervisors, as I mentioned, did pass Resolution 2064, February 18, to show their support for this current plan, but they're also their interest in working with Ames and Gilbert to work on amendments. The City of Gilbert did pass a resolution March 2, and I'm told from the Planning and Housing Director at the City of Ames that the City Council will be taking up action on a resolution in this month. So, again, this is a land use planning management growth plan. I am told that there was cooperation before this plan was adopted, but there were issues, as you might realize, with three separate governmental entities trying to respond to various growth requests, whether it be just a commercial development, a subdivision. It's easy to have there be confusion with regard to whose regulations take precedent, what policy should be applied. And so it was acknowledged that, you know, the three entities should work together. So there was concerns about overlapping regulations, inconsistencies in policies on land uses, and impacts to rural and agricultural land. So that kind of drove the need to put together, to get, you know, sit down at the table and work together on a cohesive development plan. I'm told that they worked through focus groups during this time period, focus groups that were comprised of individuals from the agricultural community, builders and developers, persons with economic development interest, and the general public to help shape the principles that I'll run through, and then input from the general public to help shape the goals. So at that time, there were six principles that were adopted. And as I go through these principles, I think what we're asking is for the commission to think about these principles and think about whether or not they're still applicable and what things might be needed to, you know, make adjustments. And same for the goals. So the first principle is for with regard to population and economic growth, and that the entities will strive towards intergovernmental cooperation for successful planning. That was the first thing. The second one talked about working together to preserve ag land, protect rural lands, and unplanned rural single-family developments, and other forms of inefficient urbanization. Three talked about the entities working together to ensure future development will be directed and targeted toward identified growth areas as identified in shared fringe area land use plan. The fourth thing talked about seeking effective and efficient management of growth, that it should be managed by government entity in order to minimize negative impacts. Five talks about orderly transition of land uses from urban to rural, as well as from rural to urban, and to work together to delineate areas of responsibility and come up with a common agreement on the definition of urban and rural land uses, which I think this plan does that. And the sixth thing talks about the three, or actually the four, I should mention that Boone County initially was to be a part of this Ames River Fringe plan, but when it got toward the time to adopt the actual plan, they decided not to adopt it because I think they were working on their own comprehensive plan, and so they wanted to work through issues within their county before getting involved in this Ames River Fringe plan agreement. So the principles led into goals, and there were seven goals that were adopted. The first goal talks about balance of mixed land uses to avoid conflicts and to maximize the efficient delivery of municipal and county services and facilities. Two talks about preventing premature development and preserve the highest value farmland in appropriate locations. Three talks about a variety of housing opportunities should be considered. And four talks about adequate opportunities for commercial and industrial development. And five talks about development decisions with the efficient provision of public services, public facilities and services. And six references the goal of protecting and preserving natural resources, including floodplains, woodland areas, wetlands, and other sensitive and natural areas. And then from this, from these principles and goals, specific land use categories were adopted. There's three main categories, and they are rural service and agricultural conservation areas. And then under each of these three main land use designations, you have specific land uses, and I'll go through those. But the first one was urban service and ag conservation. The second one is rural urban transition area, and the third is urban service area. The urban service and agricultural conservation primarily consist of the ag and farm service areas, the rural residential development. And if you look at the actual land use framework map, they're often to the perimeter of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan boundary. When I go through the designations, I'll let you know about what the color is so you can follow that along. The second one, again, is the rural-urban transition area. These are areas that are sometimes frequently seen in the center of the area from the Ames corporate limits to the boundary of the Ames Urban Fringe. These are areas that may be on a city's target for annexation. It's possible that utilities can be somewhat easily extended to these areas. The policies, which I'll get into, talk about the cities, if they have plans to annex, become the primary agency for requiring regulations. The county has a role to review, but one example that we dealt with is the Irons, which is the north area of Ames Urban Fringe. It was in a transitional area. The city had plans to annex it. They became the primary regulator. The county did do some review, but because you're dealing with two different regulations, we had to treat some of the things that they were requesting as alternative compliance issues. And if you have questions about that, I can address that later. Urban service area, these are areas that are supposed to be prime. If there's interest to develop, these are areas that are close to the city's corporate limits. Municipal utilities can be extended fairly easily, and they are to be annexed by the cities, and the county would be waiving their right to review any development because, again, the goal is for those areas to be annexed into the city and to meet the city's development requirements. So getting to the actual land uses, we didn't capture all of them, but we identified the ones that we deal with probably the most frequency. And the first one is ag and farm service. And if you look at the map, that's the light kind of lime green area. It's the predominant land use designation that you see. And it's
Jerry, what document and what page?
Okay, it's a land use framework map. It should be a separate document. And
okay.
It shows you city of Ames, corporate limits is red. Blue line represents the boundary of the Ames River Fringe. And then you see the city of Gilbert kind of on the north end of the Ames River Fringe. The boundary extends to about half of the city of Gilbert. But again, ag and farm service is light green. It's the predominant land use. You see more of that than anything else within the Ames River Fringe area. Development, residential development is discouraged in these areas. Natural areas are a little darker shade of green. Those follow the creeks, the rivers, floodplain areas. There is one darker area, and that's where the Ames Golf and Country Club is. That's considered a park area. Urban residential is what I'll call an orange color. It's mostly seen in western, southwestern Ames. It's also southeast, south, bordering the city of Gilbert's corporate limits. And these areas allow for a greater number of units. You can have more density in these areas, anywhere from 3.75 units up to, depending on the type of development, up to 10 units per acre. Annexation is required. So when you think of urban residential, always think of that there's a requirement for it to be annexed into the city. And again, the county waives their right to review in their urban residential areas. With regard to ag and farm service, if there's an agricultural plat, the cities waive their right to review because those are going to stay, likely stay in the unincorporated area. And the subdivision plat would follow the county standards. Rural residential is light yellow. If you look to the northwest, Cameron Estates is an example of rural residential. The cities waived their right to review Cameron Estates. It was developed under the city's, the county standards. Full infrastructure standards are not required. They can have decentralized wastewater treatment or on-site wastewater, wells, rural water in those locations. And then rural transitional residential, that's a bright, vivid yellow. And the Irons is an example. The Irons was a subdivision that involves single family development as well as two family attached housing. And zoning wise, it was an R2 residential district, but land use wise, it was in the rural transitional residential. It was targeted by the city of Ames as being an area that they wanted to annex. They already had an agreement with the golf course to annex at such time the city was ready for it to be annexed. So this, again, was reviewed by the county. I think we had five alternative compliance requests because, again, you're dealing with two separate zoning standards or subdivision standards. That's how we were able to respond to the review. Again, these areas are required to have urban infrastructure, often annexation agreements, development agreements, and they follow the city's development standards. An area that's not on the memo is planned industrial, and that shows up as a lavender or purple color. Actually, it's kind of a light pink area. Off to the east, there was an area that was recently changed, about 1,300 acres, which I'll get into. That area is designated planned industrial. Because it's in the urban service area, it's required to be annexed, and that's the process that those 1,300 acres took. The city of Ames annexed that area, and they are currently working on their planning for extension of city services and their plans for the actual design regulations for the proposed improvements in that area. We also have two commercial nodes. They show up as, I call them asterisks. Community commercial node is red, and you'll see there's two of those that show up on this map. Those areas typically are between 40 to 75 acres. Building sizes can range from 100,000 to up to 800,000 square feet. They're often located at intersections or arterials or highways. We're not talking about areas where there would be like a local street, which would primarily serve like a housing development. But the policies in the plan require that these areas be annexed before development or subdivision occurs, and requires urban infrastructure and to meet the city standards. That compares to the blue area, blue asterisk, which is a convenience commercial node. And that one tries to target like people, like number of people that the commercial node can serve. It can serve anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 people within a 1 to 2 mile radius. There's a limit on building size not to exceed 35,000 square feet, or a clustering of several buildings not to exceed 100,000 square feet. These are located on collector roads. The there's a clustering of these types of uses that are encouraged to limit the cost to provide service to those areas. And then talks about, you know, if they're not going to be annexed, then there's possibility of having a requirement to meet certain future standards required by the city. So there's agreements that may be needed depending on the proposed development, depending on the location. But those areas are mapped and they're planned for. Before I go any further, are there any questions on anything that I've covered so far?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
No, me either.
I guess I kind of do have a question.
Go ahead, John.
I know it is kind of talked about before, but why is the, on the east end, why is the perimeter not changing to include parts of Nevada? The line from the urban fringe boundaries.
Right.
The blue line.
Yeah, that.
It just abruptly changes right there at that line at the end of the city boundary.
Right. There's a policy, Jonathan, in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan that talks about when there's annexation changes, when annexations occur, the boundary itself does not change. However, when the three entities, reviewed the request to change the land use designation to plan industrial for that area, which is east of I-35, north of Highway 30, south of the railroad right-of-way. They also included an amendment to square up that area because Nevada's corporate limits now, with this proposed land use, after the land use change, the city annexed that area. So it's a way to show that the city of Ames has no interest in extending any further east from, and this is Highway 580th Street. So it's the common boundary between the city of Ames and the city of Nevada. But the boundary did extend beyond it into the city prior to it being changed.
So, thank you. This is Marvin, and related to that then, why does the Ames Urban Fringe Plan have that line that they expect to annex or grow halfway into Gilbert? It would seem to me that they would draw that line as well to the north, since there's already an entity there, or to the south where Kelly's already there.
Right. It does take in about half of the corporate limits. I don't know. I don't think this boundary has changed since it was approved in 2008. You know, that area between North Ames corporate limits and the city of Gilbert, that's an area that's has a lot of interest by a lot of different people. And part of that area included a requirement to do a study, which I'm told that we have some records on file, but that study was started but not completed. And that's how our staff got involved. There were several things that contributed to the need or the interest for our staff to take a look at the land use. But because that wasn't completed, we thought that that was an opportunity to take a look at the land use in the north part of that. But yeah, I don't know why it extends into half of the city, except for the fact that you're only talking about, I think, like a mile and a half. So there's a short distance there. And it is important that, you know, Gilbert be involved in the land use planning, along with the county and Ames, with regard to this area. And They recently annexed, I think, about 40 acres and are working on a single-family residential subdivision on the south part of the city in that area. The other thing, too, Marvin, is there's a watershed protection area that's considered, which might have something to do with that boundary being extended through the center of the city of Gilbert. And, you know, there's interest in trying to protect that watershed area, and in addition to the Ada Hayden area, the city of Ames uses this as a backup water supply. Any other questions before I go on? Okay, the next document will be the 28E agreement, and I'm gonna go through some of the key items in there. I'm told that it took about 4 to 5 years to adopt the Ames River Fringe Plan, which was adopted in 2008. It took another several years to adopt the 28E agreement. This 28E agreement, I think in staff's opinion, provides a lot of clarity from our perspective. I think it helps persons who are interested in bringing projects forward on, you know, what the process is. If you have a subdivision plat and you're in a certain designated area, you know, what are the policies, what's permitted in those areas, and generally, how does the process work, who's involved, you know, that type of thing. So the first thing is county zoning, and there's a policy that indicates that if a development request is not consistent with a land use designation, and it involves a zoning in the county, that the applicant needs to take care of the land use designation change first. And to do that requires action by all three entities. All three entities are required to support a proposed land use designation change. There's also a comment that talks about our rights. It says nothing in this agreement shall be construed or applied to limit county's legislative authority or discretion in adopting or amending its land use regulations. So that's pretty important. It talks about our role and our authority in dealing with the land use legislation. Subdivisions, there's rural service, agricultural, conservation area. Again, if we have a agricultural subdivision that's in the rural service ag conservation area, the cities agree through these policies to waive their right to review it. If we get a subdivision that's in a rural transition area, attachment A of the 28E agreement, you know, references some key criteria there. It says the three jurisdictions acknowledge the primacy of cities, and again, it gets to, you know, cities that have plans to annex certain areas that are in these areas. It says, again, that the jurisdictions acknowledge the primacy of cities' interest in regulating development in the areas that cities may at some future moment annex. Therefore, cities are tasked with giving primary review and, if appropriate, approval of any proposed division of land except for ag subdivisions, which remain the sole province or authority of the county. Again, cities waive their authority in a rural service and ag conservation area, and county waives their right to review if it's in an urban service area, because urban service area means that's an area that's slated for annexation. Annexation generally requires cities shall not review annexation requests until the area is designated urban service area. So the city can't annex an area that's designated rural transitional area. Or in one of these other transition areas. It has to be designated or changed to urban service in their area before they are able to take that in, and then that development would meet the city standards. Also, though, this is interesting because it talks about what they are to consider when they do that. It says cities are to consider comp plan policies, the continuity to the city limits, proximity to city services, the cost to extend city services, fiscal impact and funding sources for providing city services, and development needs of the city. So these are the things that they're supposed to take into account, which are fair game to inquire when we get a request to change to urban service area. Next thing is the map amendment process. Attachment C goes through line by line how an amendment takes place. I'm not going to go through each line, but the important thing there is if somebody wants to do something, a development, subdivision, commercial development, and that development is not consistent with the land use designation, they need to go through an amendment process first to get that addressed, and it requires all three entities, both city councils, Ames and Gilbert, and the Board of Supervisors to approve that change. From there, I want to shift to having the commission think about some of the things that have happened, you know, what changes have transpired within the last 3 years. One of the big things that involved probably the largest land use area was this designation change from ag long-term industrial reserve to the planned industrial. Again, it was 1,300 acres. The city did annex that land. The Irons residential subdivision, again, it was a single family, two family development centered around the Ames Golf and Country Club. Cameron Estates was the third edition. It offered a couple of lots. We adopted the transportation impact analysis ordinance. The City of Ames commissioned a sanitary sewer study. It was primarily to look at existing land use within the Northwest area. There were also some components of that study that talked about, you know, possibility of extensions to areas that are currently in the county but within the fringe, and what that might cost if the city were to take that on. And then the study that we did, you know, like I said, there were different things that prompted that review. It wasn't a study, it was a review. But the Ames High School being constructed, the traffic level on Hyde, paving of Hyde, increase in zoning permit and subdivision activity in this area. You know, we do quarterly reports every quarter to the board. And really, it's interesting to see the distribution map, because there's zoning permits issued throughout the county, but usually consistently the west third shows the predominant amount of growth in terms of zoning permits, in terms of development cases, and that's true too for the Ames Urban Fringe area. So some of the things that came from the review, some of the things that we recommended, there were five things. That was to potentially recognize that there is a market segment interest for larger lots in a rural setting. We have a few rural-type residential subdivisions, and we were drawing on that fact, stating that, you know, that there should be some acknowledgement of that, some support of that. Supporting the annexation and development of urban residential designated areas. If these areas are prime, ready to be annexed, then we were showing that support for that. In addition to urban growth boundaries, these are boundaries that are identified on the C2C plan. They show up as a light blue color, and they're south. There's a little urban growth boundary south of the city of Gilbert, And our policies in the C2 plan state that if we get a development request, we are to yield to the city to find out if there's interest in annexing the area that where the proposed development is, to see if what the plans are for infrastructure extensions, and to really, you know, yield to the city. But if it's not ready to be annexed, you know, try to work with them on the proposal together. Three talks about adding or additional or expanding commercial nodes. There's a commercial node on Highway 69 on 170th that's there. So we were showing support for the possibility of expanding that area. Encouraging the development of an urban growth area on the north area, the north limits, you know, whether it be a quarter mile or larger, so that if we get a request in that area, we would know that, you know, to defer people to the city, you know, to work with the city on their plan, on their projects. And then in the A1 district, if there's an existing dwelling through the residential parcel subdivision process, you can add another lot for a proposed new lot to create a new dwelling. And so we were acknowledging the fact that you can do that elsewhere in the county, but not in the Amesbury Fringe. And then, so the next part of this are five comments that we received from the commission at the time. And there was a concern about the fact that Hyde has several names, depending on what part of that stretch that you're on, whether you're south of Gilbert in the county, in the city, or north of the city. That's something that should be addressed. There was a request for more detailed mapping information with regard to the review that we did, and we did provide that information. That this review that we did should serve as talking points to help shape future discussions about amendments. There was a concern registered by several commissioners about the lack of transportation planning, and that should be provided, that we should do more work with regard to transportation planning. And acknowledging that George Washington Carver, Hyde Avenue, Highway 69 are the major north-south collector roads, and that, you know, they're reaching capacity, that there are times during peak travel that it's difficult to get through some of these key intersections. And so that was noted. I think with that, I want to go to the letter that the Board of Supervisors adopted. Some of this came from previous staff, but it was a letter that was drafted March 26, 2019, and it was sent to the Ames and Gilbert City Councils. And it's really just acknowledged.
Jerry, Jerry, is that letter attached?
I did not specifically attach a letter, but the points 1 through 8 are in the memo on page 7.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to email that out. I'm sorry, I don't have that as a separate attachment. But the letter addressed the letter addresses really 6 major points. And that one is that, the first one is that the MPO, Metropolitan Planning Organization, which I think the agency is housed at the City of Ames, but they do planning beyond the Ames corporate limits. It extends into an area that includes Gilbert. It includes part of Boone County, south of the City of Ames. And it's all types of transportation planning, whether it be motor vehicles, bicycle traffic, transit and bus planning. So everything that deals with transportation is a part of what the MPO works on. So the first item there is that type of information should be included to some level in the Ames River Fringe Plan planning. Two talks about the need for housing should be a greater component than it is. There's a mention about the Story County Housing Trust Fund and the work that they're doing, as well as urban growth areas should be incorporated into the plan. And then two, I think we've mentioned that the Board of Supervisors did commission a consultant to study the housing situation, not in just the unincorporated area of Story County, but the housing situation in all of the cities. And that's something that I think internally, there's some work that's being done on that. I think the target deadline for the study is toward the end of this year. So it's possible that, you know, maybe some of that information could be included in an amendment on the Ames River Fringe. Three talks about urban residential areas and whether or not they match up with growth projections. And really, three and four have a relation because, as I mentioned, Ames is currently working on their 2040 comprehensive plan. They're working on, like they've done in other plans, where they want to target their growth. And currently, they have four areas that they are looking at. One area is northeast of the current corporate boundary, which would include areas east of Interstate 35. There's an area toward the southeast of the city's corporate limits, west of I-35. There's an area to the southwest, so it'd be west of South Dakota. And then there's an area that's westerly, which would include potentially some land use in the city, or in the county, rather, of Boone. So those are the four areas that they're doing work on right now. Their plan is targeted to be completed late spring, early summer. And so that's the questions with those two, you know. Do these urban residential areas, which are supposed to be targeted for annexation, you know, how they might impact these targeted growth areas? You know, those areas need to be looked at. Five is the oftentimes the competing interest with the existing rural water areas, service areas that are out there in the county, you know, looking at their interest and their existing infrastructure, their plans that they have, and competing interests that cities have to extend, to annex into certain areas and extend their services, and being more transparent to landowners, to developers, about how that whole situation works. Cities have agreements with the rural water associations. And so there's an item here that talks about getting that information into the plan and making that more transparent to all the participants, all the entities, and all those who may potentially bring development at play here. The last thing talks about the DOT's plan to close all the at-grade crossings, whether they be driveways or highway intersections with Highway 30, from the interchange of I-35 to Highway 30 east to Nevada. And but again, focusing on potentially looking at the land use in the Ames River Fringe area with regard to this DOT project. So that's what that covers. I mentioned earlier, we did send out requests from departments to get an idea as to how the Ames River Fringe Plan impacts the work that they do. You know, how does this growth development impact their departments? Environmental Health, Margaret James, the director, did provide some really good information. I'd like to highlight it for you. We did provide a copy of that email for the commission. It's dated May 1. And she broke it down into seven areas. Again, the focus is really with septic systems. And kind of some of the things that they are asked to deal with when we have subdivision development or commercial development. The first thing talks about lot size. And, you know, trying to deal with the impact or the footprint of the house itself. Sometimes there's often accessory structures that are allowed, and the configuration of the septic systems. She talks about the different technology that's out there with different types of systems, one being mechanical, and she says basically it uses a filtering material, and there's an area that is needed, like a 14-by-7-foot area. She also cites a second type of system, which is called a UV light system, which takes care of tertiary treatment. And ultimately, these systems are able to discharge to the ground surface. But she says these systems are very costly. This is beyond a standard septic tank, distribution box, and lateral. So, the comment later talks about how, the county, and I think the state requirements typically support a system that would be for soil-based, like a standard system, which would include the septic tank, distribution box, and laterals. But depending on the soil quality, and these are things that Margaret and her staff review, they take a look at the soil characteristics and try to help with, what type of system is best depending on the location and where the development is to occur. The second thing she talks about is landscaping. There's distance separation requirements of 20 feet from the laterals. There's often impacts to wooded areas, which can have somewhat of a negative consequence if you're trying to preserve natural areas. She goes into talking about geothermal areas and the impacts there, and needing 100-foot vertical clearance from septic systems to geothermal wells. There's a clustering septic system standard where more than one house might share, or have their own tank rather, but share the actual treatment system. She talks about how this might present maintenance concerns, like having the same timing with somebody that you're sharing a septic system with can be cumbersome sometimes. And she talks about a detailed project, some details of the project in Squaw Valley. They have a common system that is used there. I think much of that development started in the 70s, but it's currently being redesigned. And so she provides some information about that, and ultimately that it will be costly for the landowners to deal with this new design that is being worked on. She also talks about the irons when she's as a reference there to big pipe ready. There was a recommendation that was made that the irons put in like dry sewer is what it's called, where it's not actually connected to the city sewer, but the infrastructure is in place at such time when the city is ready to annex, the piping would be in place, and it wouldn't be as cumbersome to deal with. You don't have to tear up the yards, because she cites here with this particular project, when the city's ready to annex, the cost will be borne by the lot owners, by the homeowners. She talks about the increase of groundwater to development because There's a lot of issues at play when you develop land, but she points out something that's very worthy of stating, and she mentions that 100 gallons per person per day is created in wastewater that is generated. So that impacts our drainage ways, waterways, and could also compound flood events. The last thing she talks about is the service buyout areas, which we kind of got into, that's addressed in the Board of Supervisors memo. And with that, the other thing that I just wanted to kind of touch on is the schedule. This is something that this discussion was something that we wanted to take up last month, but with what we were dealing with, we decided to postpone that and try to have that discussion this month. I think I would suggest that we amend the schedule. It's not likely that I'm going to get this information on the agenda for the Board of Supervisors May 12th meeting, but we can get it ready for the May 19th agenda. And then the plan is to bring the comments, share those comments with the Board of Supervisors at the May 19th meeting, but to come together, Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, to work on some details, likely to be a letter that would address our talking points, similar to the letter that was adopted in March of last year, that we would provide to our partners, City of Ames and the City of Gilbert. And then the last thing is, I would welcome any comments that you have on anything that I've covered with the plan, with the 28E agreement, the land use framework map, and then also really interested in any strengths that you see with some of the things that you've reviewed with your time on the commission, as well as any weaknesses that you see. And with that, I'd be happy to open it up for any questions.
A lot of information.
No kidding. although I did go through all of this before, I guess I wasn't. Are we to grind this out today, or is this you're just giving it to us to come back again? Because this is, as the other person said, a lot of information.
It is, and this will not be the only time that you'll have the opportunity to provide input on, the current policy, the current 28E agreement, and the map. We really just wanted to kind of start internal discussion amongst the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then have that with the Board of Supervisors, and then bring both together to try to find unity and cohesion before we start trying to have those discussions with our partners and trying to figure out, what this process will look like. Because as I said, it was a pretty extensive process. My hats are off to everybody, every staff person, all the commissioners, the city councils. This was a large undertaking to get all three entities together and to agree on these documents that I've gone through. It's quite the task. So, but we know in working through some of these reviews that we've done. We know that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And so that's what we want to do.
I wanted to comment. This is Cheryl. I really appreciate on page 7 of the menu, of the memo, that number 2 of the Story County Housing Trust being involved, and number 5, the rural water part of it. Those are issues that are near and dear to my heart, so I really appreciate that they're in there.
Thank you, Cheryl.
This is Marvin. On page 2 of that document, the interesting to me, and this is just a comment pointing out of interest, on the six guiding principles, item two, that it is the guiding principle of Boone County, Story County, City Name, City of Dover, to work together to preserve agricultural lands and protect rural lands from unplanned rural single-family development and other forms of inefficient urbanization. I find that principle interesting because people that own rural agricultural land are not interested in urbanization, and if they want to develop a single-family development on their land, I understand what the goal of the principle is, but the goal of that is as the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is propagated and as the city spreads more and more, that it's going to move into urban area, and they don't want to compete with somebody that developed a house on their own land in a way that's inefficient for the city of Ames.
Right, and with that, the goal is to, you know, that's why we have this goal, I think, of focusing on these urban residential areas first. These are areas that are contiguous to the city's boundaries, and those should be the focus. That's where development should be encouraged and not in the outlying areas of the plan. That's what that policy is getting to, or that principle.
I totally get it, but you asked us for our experiences, and I'm looking at the irons, right? Let's get this approved and get this developed, and the plan is we're going to annex that, and we're going to provide services, and that was, what, 4 years ago?
Right, yeah.
And it's not annexed, or it's not done, I'm not, does it have services? Has it been annexed yet?
No, it was to be included with land to the south and to the southwest, and there was a concern with one of the participants, one of the entities, with regard to the land use designation change on that annexation plan, so that got halted. But I think what you're getting to, Margaret, is that in... I was thinking, Margaret submitted the document that I went through. In these transitional areas, there should be a time frame, a hard and fast time frame by which, you know, these annexation plans will be followed through. Because you're right, it has been several years since that development.
Right, and I agree with that. I just want to raise that as a concern that we look at that 24E and it basically says that the city gets to dictate how this happens, that we are bound to get ready to the city's planning. The city makes the plan, they get us to go along with that plan based on all of these different things, and then they run into a snag and the stuff that they said they were going to deliver doesn't happen.
I
just have a concern about how the county abdicates responsibility for making these planning decisions to the city, and then the city doesn't come through.
I'd like to preface, though, again, the irons was to be a part of several acres, hundreds of acres to the south and to the southwest, and that land use designation change was not supported by the city of Gilbert. They only supported a part of it, and so that has a lot to do with, or contributes to the fact that, you know, that area has not been annexed yet. Because it was to take in the land that Mr. Friedrich acquired at George Washington Carver, Cameron School Road to the southwest area there, the Borgmeyer land to the south of the golf course, and the irons and the golf course. That was all supposed to be a part of this annexation plan, but there were land use designation change requirements that needed to be acted on first, and those weren't all, that wasn't all supported by all three entities. So that has a bearing on it, but that these are things that
I totally get it, and I get that, that there was a hang-up, but I guess my question is why did we move one small piece of it to say go ahead and build these with the idea that we'll annex, and then it doesn't happen because, you know, it seems to me we should get the things worked out in the approvals first, and then do the development, not the other way around. But we don't have a voice in that when we say we're bound by the 24E to approve it because we have to.
The irons was in the transitional area, and so because Ames had that annexation plan, we took a secondary role. We did review it, but we took a secondary role with it, and it ended up that, you know, we treated it as alternative compliance request, as they stated, and so it was a part of that development plat. But it fell under the city's standards for the most part. But with regard to that, are there some things that you think might be helpful in, like, these transitional areas that might address conflicts like that? Is there anything you could suggest?
Well, I think that date bound or planning prioritization, right? So saying if you're planning on doing a development and you're planning on annexing it, then we're not forcing you to annex it now, but what are the annex approval steps that are needed in order to get that annexation approved and get those done so that you can do that development, so that when the city is ready to make that annexation decision, that, again, we're not going to be 3 or 4 years later down the road, and I don't know that we're any closer to having that, you know, providing services. The other thing is what you pointed out already, which is things like the transitionary development with the issues with the septic systems or geothermal systems competing for small footprints, and, you know, like the irons, right? Well, the developers decided not to put in the dry sewer system because it would be cost prohibitive to the development. Now it's going to be cost prohibitive to the homeowners. Not that maybe was the wrong decision, because, you know, we're no closer to getting sewer services delivered there, and, you know, there may have been issues with the piping. But I think these kinds of things, where development happens on the promise of annexation, and then annexation may or may not happen, and there's an indefinite timeline. So I think establishing a timeline, is kind of required to doing these. And I don't know if we're allowed to put that as a condition of approval, based on the 24E, to say, you know, the city is approving it, it's within the Ames River and Finch plan. You know, what are we allowed to do to push back? And I think we need to get some of those things built in on the front end.
So then, I don't know what the word is, but have a timeline, but then consequences, if this doesn't happen within this window, you know, what would the consequences be? Because there's so many factors.
Yeah. What's the enforcement arm of the agreement between the county and the city?
Right, because you're right, because it's in the unincorporated area. You know, with the goal of being asked to show in the unincorporated. So, but yeah, I think that's definitely something that we need to work out. If we don't hit that threshold, whatever that time period is, what are the consequences?
Right, so that's my feedback. I don't have a solution, but that's my feedback with respect to the county and the city assuming a zero infringement plan, which is, you know, we have instances of where these things were pitched one way based on, you know, pending annexation, and then that doesn't happen. So what is the either the enforcement arm from the county or those residents, right? Or what is the approval options from the county? You know, if we don't have any method to say we don't approve of this because of the 24E prioritization, then the city doesn't deliver, then, you know, what is the recourse? And I think that ambiguity needs to be somehow codified.
Right, part of the policies.
Yeah.
I can tell you there has been areas, a request for development that have been urban residential, and the city of Ames took a position of supporting a change to allow like a rural type development. There was one west central on 500th Avenue that involved the creation of a few lots, and there were some changes in that designation so that it could stay, that the development could happen. They took care of the land use designation first, as what is required. That's going to be in the county. That's probably going to be in the county for a long while.
Right. All right. That's my only input. Okay. Hey, we've been going for 2.5 hours, and I don't know how much longer. Is there anything else that you need from us?
I'm just interested, is there any other commissioners have comments?
Well, frankly, that's a lot more than I think that we could do, and without having some other meeting with these documents in front of us to delve into. And I think our chairman is really good at guiding us through this because of his experience. But I'm feeling rather inadequate in terms of sitting here and saying I've got something I could suggest, but I don't at this point.
Thank you, PJ.
Thank you for that. There was another comment.
Yeah, this is Kathy. I just have a comment on the DOT when they're trying to close all the exits and the gravel roads going from Ames to Nevada. That's a concern on people on the east side.
Yeah, they're currently working on the 580th Avenue interchange project. That's going to be the first one that they're going to work on. So all of the at-grade driveways and county roads will be closed eventually through this project, and there'll be off-ramps with frontage roads as a way, you know, frontage roads that will extend east and west north of Highway 30. And east and west south of Highway 30, extending to this new interchange, and that's something that's the DOT is currently working on. It's part of a bigger overall project. And there's been several meetings, public meetings on this project.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
The other comment that I wanted to make as related to, made mention of the, you know, needing to, the transportation planning related to developments is part of the urban fringe plan. I think we've seen many concerns come up, you know, in different areas as developments happen. And I think an example of that was what we saw today with this development and the discussion about providing turn lanes into, you know, or out of developments and who pays for that. And I don't want to get into too much of a discussion of that, but the idea of one road turning onto another road because of increased traffic, I can see pushback from the development there, but providing a turn lane into their development, or, you know, out of, I think those types of things are the exact kind of things that we're talking about. I mean, right here by where I live, the bend in from Bloomington on the George Washington Harbor. There's a development with a road, a street to turn in, with I think 5 houses but 7 available lots, and there's no turn lane in or out of there, and you're going west and then north on George Washington Harbor. To turn into that, you cross a painted island, a double yellow. And it's an illegal left turn, but I see it happen all the time. Because there's a street there. And the only way to get into it is to go a quarter mile up the road and make a U-turn where there's only a two-lane road with no turnouts in an entrance to the development to the north. And things like that get done without any issues addressed.
That area that you're talking about, though, that's inside the city of Ames?
That's a good question, because on the west side of the road is county.
Okay.
It's unincorporated city, and on the east side is the city of Ames. So the road is the divider, and I don't know how that works. It's exactly the land that you were talking about, which is that south and west of Cameron School and George Washington Harbor, where that development's already happened. All of that land is unincorporated city. It hasn't been annexed yet. But that road, George Washington Harbor, is the divider. So either way, that development that happened was approved by the city, but the transportation issues still exist.
Okay.
So, anyway, are there any other comments from the commission for Jerry related to this great update, by the way, on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan? Jerry, do you need anything from us based on this update?
No, nope, this is just a discussion. It's really appreciated. The next step will be to take this information, the same information that I provided to the commission, to the Board of Supervisors, with the addition of the comments that were provided. I'm wondering, Marvin, since this is a public meeting, should we ask if there's anyone on the phone that has a question or a comment from the general public?
Absolutely. Is there anybody on the phone that has any questions or comments related to the update on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan? Hearing none. Okay. Thank you then, Jerry, for the update, and appreciate the discussion. Is there any other moving? Yes. Yeah, okay. Moving on to staff comments or discussion?
Yeah, I'll just briefly
show you.
I'll just briefly tell you there's a lot of activity going on, actually. We received 3 conditional use permits for proposed new towers. It's part of the StoryCom project, and so we're going to be reviewing those. Those come to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then ultimately action by the Board of Adjustment. We're working on 2 residential parcel subdivisions, an ag subdivision right now. We just received a co-location request for Windstream Communications, and that's an item that will go to the Board of Adjustment. And we received a request, which is the first stage of a conditional use permit submittal for the Nevada wastewater treatment plant. So we have a conceptual review meeting on that. But that item will be before the Planning and Zoning Commission and then ultimately action by the Board of Adjustment. So those are a few of the things that we're currently reviewing.
Excellent. Is there any commission discussion, any comments that
I had a non-related comment. This is Cheryl.
Right.
I am, as you know, a teacher, and I've been experiencing the inequity of the internet coverage in the county with my students and what they can access when they have to go to the parking lot at school to do their homework at this awful time. And I read an article in the New York Times this month recently about the Universal Service Fund and how it's not being well managed. It subsidizes phone and internet access in rural areas. And I just wanted to bring up that subject of whether we're getting what we need for this rural area in the way of internet.
To add to that, Cheryl, I can tell you that one of the many items that's on the Board of Supervisors' strategic plan is to take a look at the current status of internet in the county. So that's something that we are to take a look at as staff. Kind of on a side note, we've reached out to the other 2 unincorporated villages, and they also too did provide comments about poor utilities and specifically poor internet service or lack of internet service. So this is something that is on the radar, so to speak. It's on the strategic plan, and it's something that staff will be working on.
The real impact of that, Jerry, to piggyback on Cheryl's comment, is that the Gilbert School District essentially canceled the rest of the semester after March 12th, from March to June, because they couldn't enforce remote teaching because of the unreliable internet for all of the students. They couldn't count on that. So because of that, I think that was the main contributing factor to the decision not to resume with remote education.
And I agree with that as a teacher and a special ed teacher particularly. I mean, there were special education issues as well, but we have a one-on-one thing where all the students have a Chromebook, but if you can't provide the internet for the Chromebook, you can't provide equitable education, so that was a real problem.
It's not a question of whether or not the students had a computer, because they all do. It's a question of they can't ensure that they have internet, because there are many known students with struggling with that. So that's just my input. So thank you, Cheryl, for bringing that. Is there any other comments from the commission?
No.
Hearing none, do we have a motion for adjournment?
I make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
This is Mark. Okay, we have a motion to adjourn and a second. Voice vote, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? None opposed. All right. Thank you, everyone. Meeting stands adjourned. Thank you for your remote participation during these alternative meetings.
Thank you, Commissioner.
No problem.